Hey, boo. Thank you for my bid in the bed. I likes that. I likes that. I absolutely love it. Anyway, I just been wanting to say hi. I ain't been doing nothing. Just moving and shaking. Anyway, when you're done being a little busy bee, come by. All right, boo. Call me back. It's not Wanda. Oh, Chile. All right, bye.
Yes, sir. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.
New year and who this? Welcome to this week's episode of the Purple Pants Podcast, and I am your host, Bryce Isaiah. And what's been going on? Salutations. I hope everyone had a happy and healthy new year, okay? New year, who this? New decade, who this? What's poppin'? How's everyone been doing? How's everyone's week been? Your first week in 2020, okay? Well, you know me, busy as a bee. I brought my New Year's in D.C. at 6-8 events. Me and Wendell was up at the Fillmore. Oh, listen. I wet the whistle a little too much, okay? Because the next morning, Wendell was like, why were you rolling around on the floor in the Fillmore? Okay, my song came on, and I was in a video shoot, and so the video shoot required for me to get on the ground, okay? And I was rolling around on the ground, having me a grand old time, okay? Then, the next day, before we went back to Philly, we met up with Nora! And let me tell you, Nora is... what you see on TV, that's not even a half of Nora. Let me tell you how Nora tried to read me. So she came in and she was like, Bryce, were you sick last night? You just wore a hoodie to the club. I was like, ooh, and I, ooh. But, and listen, I was a little hungover, so Nora had made us some fresh lemonade. So it was amazing. And just to be able to meet Nora, child, we sat at that brunch table for almost 4 hours just chatting. Almost said shitting. But no, we didn't at the table. We was just chatting. But yes, it was so much fun to meet Nora. She was like such a positive energy, and like what a way to like start my 2020 is with Nora. And best believe Nora knows it all. Oh, crrr. This episode is, oh, and then I went to a concert, you know, Ashanti, Monica, Little Mo, A. Marie, and Carrie Hilson came to Philly, and I happened to be able to get tickets to go to the show, and I was all here for it. I just love me Ashanti. Ashanti killed it. She had a boot on and still was dancing. I love me some Monica. I love me some Carrie Hilson. I haven't seen Carrie Hilson. Pretty Girl Rocks. I was mad I did not get to see Little Mo. Got there a little late. You know, baby boy is always so fashionably late, so I miss my girl Little Mo. But it was a great time, you know me, busy as a bee, trying to, you know, move and shake in this new year, 2020. New year, who this? So listen, I got a jam-packed episode for you guys this week again, so I'm changing the format again a little bit, so bear with me, and then next week we will be back to our regularly scheduled program. So we got the church announcements, and on the menu this week, I have an exclusive first interview from Aaron Meredith from season 39, Island of the Idols, Big Bay, and he don't leave no rock unturned. He came to let us know what's going on. We've got the Purple Pants Picks. I've got Advice with Bryce, and we got the Freak of the Week. So listen, let's get into these church announcements. So listen, the new year has started. New year, who this? Okay? Because we don't know nobody. We don't know none of that past negative energy from 2019. Okay? So when you get them texts, hey, big head, what you doing? Nope. New year, who this? I don't got time. What Mary J. Blige say? No more drama in my life. I don't want no more drama. I'm so tired. Okay? Nope. New year, who this. Now, I do have to be honest, Purple Pants Posse, child, I've been trying to speak positivity into my life, but I've been struggling a little bit in the 2020. I just feel like, I don't know, I've been trying to do all the right things and say all the right things, but I find myself being not as happy as I would like to be. So I continue to try to put my best foot forward. New year, who this? But it is a struggle. So I don't know if any of you guys are out there, set the goals high. And, you know, you're not, you know, meeting, you know, just figure like, you know, new year, you're supposed to be marching into the new year. Well, child, it seems I'm rolling into the new year. And I'm trying to really find my balance and trying to really find, like, what makes me happy. And just like, you know, I'm just at a, you know, a crossroads in my life. So, you know, keep the Purple Pants Badass in your prayers, and I keep my Purple Pants Posse. But listen, sometimes the New Year's don't start off how we want it to start off, but we got to keep moving, and we got to keep our head up high. And, you know, I'm talking to myself because, listen, the past couple of days I've just been in the bed, and I've been being mean to some of my friends who've been, like, nothing but nice and supportive to me. And, you know, I just, you know, got to try to, you know, just keep it moving forward. But, you know, here at the Purple Pants Podcast, you know, I keep it real and funky with y'all. So I just, you know, new year, who this? We leave all of that negative energy behind us. Also, on the church announcements, I just want to let y'all know, Winners at War Season 40 is premiering February 12th. Okay. And you already know I am the cheer captain of Team Wendell. All right. Get my cheerleader outfit. Give me a W. W. We got you. W. Got you. W. Give me an E. E, we got your E, got your E. Give me an N. N, we got, okay, listen, I'm the cheerleader captain, okay? I don't play about my friend. And so you know we're going to be doing a watch party, okay? And you know I'll give you the exclusive details here at the Purple Pants Podcast, but I won't give it to you right now. Give us a couple of more weeks and I'll have some info. And on the last church announcements, I just want to say, y'all know Life After Lockup premiered this week, and you know 60 Days In premiered this week, so y'all better be on it, okay? I'm not talking about it this week, but on the next week's episode, I'm covering it, okay? So get up on it. Get, oh, come on, wait. Joe Bona, let's do it. Come on, Genuine, ride it. 60 Days In, my saddle's waiting. Life After Lockup. Okay, listen, y'all get, come on. Somebody, ooh, oh, wait, hold on, wait a minute, I didn't, halfway through the church, well, I'm already done the church announcements, but hold on, ooh, 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 wet in the whistle, okay, and it's burning, okay, new year, who this? So, my good friend, Rodney Lavoie Jr., for Christmas, got me a juicer. You know, he wants a better baby boy. So I'm starting juicing. And so Rodney gave me this list of juices of how to juice. So I went to the grocery store, got these juices. And, you know, I was calling him this morning because I'm like, wait a minute, how do you, I don't know how to, you know, I didn't know what the measurements were. So I'm wetting my whistle today with a little ginger, some celery, carrots, strawberries, and apples. And baby, I think my portion of the ginger was a little too much because, hold on, wait. Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire down the hatch. Woo! Okay, every time I wet the whistle, baby, this throat is burning from that ginger. But come on, ginger, clear me out. Get it together. Okay, but yes, that's what we wet in the whistle. Of course, you know I'm wetting the whistle in the official Purple Pants Podcast. Woo, let me wet the whistle wine glass, big bang. Hold on, let me wet the whistle again. You know, new year, who this? I'm being healthy, okay? Yeah. Oh, whoo, whoo, Rodney. But all right, let's get into this menu. All right, we starting the new year off right, y'all. I told y'all I had another exclusive for you. I am so excited to have one of my favorite players from Idols of the Island. We got Aaron Meredith on the Purple Pants Podcast. What's poppin', Aaron?
Yes, sir. What's up, Bryce? I appreciate you. I appreciate you bringing me on and ask me some questions. So I'm excited. I'm ready to get into it.
Yes. Well, first of all, before we get into all of that, Happy New Year. How's everything going for you this new year? We in 2020.
It's great. I just celebrated my birthday. So my birthday falls right around the Christmas time. So just turned 37. It's 2020. Going to make it my best year yet. So yeah, man, it's, every new year brings around new gifts. And this year I've got lots of plans and I've got lots of ambitions and I'm ready to turn it up in 2020.
So, real quick, are you one of those people that's like, new year, new me, or do you do New Year's resolutions, or are you just saying, like, it don't matter, I'm just always working on myself?
I'm always working on myself, but what I like to do is set goals. So I'll put goals in place at the start of the new year where, all right, this is what I want to accomplish in 2020. I want to do X, Y, and Z. And then as I work through the year, I have these big macro goals. And then what I do is I just break the goals down into micro steps that I need to take in order to reach them. So, you know, a couple things that I got on my list, I usually just, you know, set them big and I shoot for it. Some financial goals, some personal goals. Every year is a opportunity for me to reset the gauge and shoot for the stars.
Okay, so basically what you're saying, new year, new Meredith. Okay, I'm here for it.
Yeah. I mean, last year was consumed with Survivor, right? So I started the interview process in December of last year. So Survivor has really consumed all of my 2019. So a lot of the goals that I had in place, I couldn't really work on just because I was so focused on playing the game.
So, are you a fan of the show? Like, are you a fan, or are you a fan, or are you a fan of the show?
All right. So, in fan level, I'm a fan. Like, so I'm not a fan. I know the game. I've watched every episode, but I can't sit here and tell you who won Immunity Challenge in season number 3 and who was voted off 4th and, you know, who blindsided who in the seasons. But I have watched every episode. I know every winner. I know the game, so I'm not some newbie coming in and just, I like Survivor because I got an opportunity to be on TV. I've been following the game for a long time. I applied, you know, back in 2007. So, yeah, I mean, this is something that I've wanted to do for a while.
So, real quick, let's just touch your knowledge since you a fan. What's, like, top 3 seasons? And just remember, you on a Purple Pants podcast, so answer correctly. So, what's your top 3 seasons?
All right, number 1 season, hands down, Heroes versus Villains. I don't know how you can go another way. I mean, that was an iconic cast. Okay. So, if I'm going to go with just pure season, Heroes versus Villains is my number 1. Top new player seasons, Token Teens. So I'm a huge Tyson coach. The Fishback.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a season loaded with characters and great gameplay. And then I'm going to go ahead and say my next season is Game Changers. I enjoyed that season as well. A lot of top returning players. I'm a more of a returning player season guy. I'm invested in the characters and their gameplay. I like redemption stories. So, you know, those are my top three with Token Teens being the one lone newcomer season that's my jam.
Got you. But, you know, your microphone broke out, so I think you said your third one was season 28, Kageon. That's a great season, Aaron, I'm trying to tell you.
Kageon is
a great season. So, yeah, and that's an all-newbie season as well, too. You really don't need to watch after 3 episodes, but, you know, I hear the rest of the season is good.
LJ was my dude, Jeremiah, you know, I liked Alexis, Jeffra.
Bitch, keep it cute. Aaron, this interview can end real quick, okay?
You know I'm just playing.
Right, because you know I'm so serious. I will press delete so quick.
But hey, I just popped off the rest of your cast, so not bad. And Morgan.
I don't even remember half of their names. So, I mean, if that's what you say the name of the cast
I bet.
So, you talked a little bit about, you know, you got called back in December of, like, last year for your season. How many times did you apply for Survivor?
Shit. So 2004 wasn't the first season that I applied for, but the application was terrible. My video was awful. I didn't even have a shot. It was forced.
Wait, so give us real quick.
I watch it back. I would never share it. So,
oh my God. Wait, but can we get a 2004 like sample of like what your video would have been like? Because in my mind, I have an idea. But tell me what you think your video would have been like when you your 2004 video.
Man, so I'm that stereotypical, you know, alpha male gym good dude and, you know, saying stupid things. And that's what I was. That's who I was. And at 23 years old, yes, that's what you got. You got me standing in the gym doing bench press saying, oh, I'm going to bench press myself. It was just stupid.
Well, like, shirt on or shirt off?
Shirt off. Shirt off. Shirt off. I actually did it. I did an audition tape 1 year in my underwear.
Oh.
In my
underwears.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
We might need to call Jeff. We might need 2,000. See, that was the problem. That's why you ain't make. Okay, we ain't even gonna go far. But all right, okay. I'm a fan of 2004 Aaron already. So
yeah.
When you got the call, what was it like? Was you freaking out? Was you throwing your son up in the air? Was you like when they called you back and was like, "Oh, can I speak to Aaron?" Like, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
So I've gotten a call like several years. So I've been called and said, "Hey, we like you. You know, we got you in the mix. We just need you to do, you know, this. So let's make a video and let's have you doing this." And so I've had the call before. In 2007, I actually had the call that I was going to finals.
Oh.
So they called me up. The casting person I was working with was like, "Yo, they love you. You know, we're going to fly you out. Be ready. Like, finals are this week. You got to be ready for a week. Yada, yada, yada." So I was ready to go. Bags packed, ready to go. I get a phone call about 3 days before I was supposed to take off the finals. It was like, "Yeah, we're going to go in a different direction."
Oh.
So for me, I had made it to finals before. I was there. And then got the rug pulled out from underneath me. So fast forward a few years, I've been called before. I was called for David versus Goliath. "Hey, you interested still? All right, we're thinking about you. We may need you for finals." And then nothing, ghost. So this year, there was the same thing. "Hey, we like you." And I'm like, "Yeah, all right. Like, yeah, yeah, okay. I like me too. But thank you. I appreciate it." And yeah, they were like, "All right, you're going to finals." So for me, being invited to finals before and not going, I wasn't excited. So I was like, "Yeah, all right, you're just going to call me and tell me that I'm out." So 3 days till, 2 days till, 1 day till, I'm like, "Oh shit, I'm going to finals."
Wow.
So that's about when I turned it up. That's when I, you know, I took my phone, I threw it across the room. Oh. I went outside yelling. I got my game face on. So yeah, it was my finals last year was November 29th. I took off and returned home December 5th. So wow. I remember the dates. I remember when and vividly. And yeah, so that's kind of when it all started.
So that's popping. So you know, in Survivor, they generally like cast an archetype of like a player. Who in past seasons, or who do you think like your archetype of a player is, or do you feel like you broke the mold with the archetype of a player?
Oh, all right. So I guess from a physical standpoint,
You're not that strong, so you keep saying physical strength part. Your body's not that jacked. I hate to break it to you, but you are right. Okay.
I didn't win the first two immunity challenges. The physical. No. You know, I'm not physical at all. But so from a physical standpoint, my archetype, I'm going to be that, you know, the alpha male, you know, strong dude, challenge guy. But from the mental standpoint, I mean, I'm a dad. I'm a little bit older. You know, 36. I got, you know, a wife, a job, a career. So your typical alpha male bro guy is going to be 20-something, no responsibilities, definitely no kids, single, ready to mingle. It's tough. It's tough to kind of fit me into what archetype I got cast for. I think that's with the whole new casting change, that's what opened it up for me, was that I am a different type of a mold of somebody who you cast. Aesthetically, you're going to think of me of one person, but my life says a whole nother story.
You know who you reminded me of a lot? I thought of, like, when I started reading your stories, you reminded me of a Jeremy Collins.
Yeah. So I would go Jeremy Collins. I mean, I would say Jeremy is a little bit more, he's more humble than I am. He's more likable.
All facts.
Yeah, so I mean, from a self-awareness standpoint, I would say I'm very self-aware. I know how I come off. I know how Jeremy comes off. I'm not Jeremy. I'm not going to pretend to be Jeremy. I'm not going to act like I'm Jeremy. But yeah, I'm more of a Jeremy Collins than I would be a Joe Anglum or Cole from, what season did he play? Hustlers, right?
Hustlers.
So I'm not that. I'm more Jeremy than that.
So your archetype is more like married dad, but still got the young gym off. So that's kind of sort of is what you're saying you're describing yourself as.
Yeah. I mean, put me in a setting with 20-something-year-olds and I'm going to school them. I mean, I'll show them what's up. Like, that's it. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I mean, I can still throw down. I'm older, but I can still throw down.
You're not that old, though. But so when you went out to Fiji, tell me what was like, I can't even talk because I'm so excited because this question, because you know, I can't relate to a lot of your Survivor game because you know, my Survivor game was cut out short because I was the real challenge beast and they wanted me out of there. But you know, long gone, new decade, I ain't even stressing about it. But what was it like when you were first out there on the beach? Were you like, what the f- is going on? Because for me, when I was out there, Aaron, like, it took me 2.5 days to be like, bitch, you are actually in Survivor. Get your head in the game. Like, I literally was like, oh, look, hey, look at the sand. Like, I'm building a shelter. Like, I literally was like fanning out in my head. I was like so conscious of what I said. And I think that that was truly one of my downfalls in the game, was that I never really like allowed myself to be like in the game. And I never really allowed for like spicy Brycey to come out. Was that experience the same for you? Or was you like, I'm old, I got a family, I'm ready to go? Or were you having like, or even the moment when you like, they line you guys up and then Jeff comes up and he's like, welcome to this season of 39. What, like, what was your experience like?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was waiting for that. I was waiting for the marooning. I was waiting for Jeff to say, welcome to season 39. We never got that. We didn't get a marooning, your traditional, you know, Survivor. Here's Jeff. Here's the other tribe. You guys are doing a challenge right now. Or you, this is, you know, you're going to hop off a boat with a bunch of supplies. We didn't get that. So I'm in my head, I'm waiting. I'm like, where's the boat with Jeff on it? Where's the barge that we're floating to? You know, where's the beach that we're going to when we're going to see Jeff and two flags and two, the orange tribe and the purple tribe? I'm waiting for all these things and it never happened. We hit the beach and it was game on. Like, you're in Survivor. So for me, I didn't realize I was in Survivor until that first tribal council. I got blindsided. In my head, I'm a fan. I'm in my TV right now. So I'm thinking, who am I going to scheme with? Who am I going to lie to? I got to lie to this person and that person because I'm in Survivor. I'm playing Survivor. So I got to do what I say you should do when you're sitting down on the couch watching the show. That was my huge, huge downfall in the beginning, is playing the game like I'm a fan instead of playing the game like I'm in the game. So I didn't get in the game until I got blindsided.
It's a hard transition, and I think that that's what people don't realize. Like, anyone that's listening that ever wants to play Survivor, it's a hard transition. Like, and some of us never get the opportunity to transition out of it because it's literally like you are a fan. Like, you are like, sometimes I found myself sitting back watching others play like, ooh, I can't wait to see what this going to be like on TV. Like, you know, like it literally, I was like fangirling out. But funny that you say that, because after the first vote, when you was kind of blindsided about Ronnie, how did you bounce back from that? Was you like, oh my God, I'm next? Or were you like, wait a minute, I got to do some bench presses and I got to get it together? Like, what was that like?
It was a wake-up call. So for me, it was one of them things where, all right, brother, you came out here with some goals and some plans, and you thought you had it all figured out. You're a fan of the show, and you're the best fan of the show, and ain't nobody else out here playing the game the way that you're playing the game, and you're just going to run circles around these clowns. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking going into. Like, I know this game so well. There's no way they know the game like me, and I'm just going to outplay them straight up off the bat from the jump. From day one, I'm going to outplay them. And once I went to that first tribal council, and I had Jeff sitting there, and he read the votes, and my heart sank, my gut dropped. It was like, I just got played by 8 other people in my tribe. I got played. Not me playing them. They played me. For me, quick. Like, shook. So I had an opportunity to kind of gather myself, pull together. All right, you got a nice long boat ride back from tribal council, and in my head I'm like, all right, now it's time to play the game. Say the right thing to the right people, right? You guys, you know, hey, I would have voted Ronnie out, and it's okay, it's a game. But I knew I had a bond with my girl Missy, so I pulled Missy aside and I was like, Missy, yo, can I vent to you? Do you mind? Family, like, we family, we people out here. I know you told me you had my back, you didn't have my back, but I need to vent. So that's the scene where you see me pulling Missy aside and just letting her have it, because I needed to let somebody know how I felt. Right. And I knew that she would take it. She took it like a champ. I know she said in her confessional, stop crying, bro, but that made our bond tighter, because I trusted her. I trusted I could vent to her. I trusted I could tell her how disappointed I was, and that I was ready to play the game. And that's essentially what that conversation was like, yo, I'm ready to play this game with you. I see where it's at right now. Let's go.
So that obviously must have been a turning point for you, because we see at Jason's tribal and his elimination in a pre-merge, you were considering voting out Eliro. Was Elaine's vote blocker the sole factor in you remaining loyal, or did you feel like you would be better off going with Eliro, or you felt as though it wasn't ready for you to make a big move that soon?
So it wasn't a matter of me trying to make a big move as more as it was me trying to save my ass. Oh. So I know going into a 4-4 situation, all right, I'm not drawing rocks. Not at day 14. There's no scenario, there's no chance where I'm going to be willing to draw rocks.
Well, let's just say real quick, you know, some people, you know, maybe day 14 is farther than some people got. So, you know, I would be like, bitch, draw them rocks. But okay, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so if I can control it, if I can put my fate in my own hands,
true.
Let me do that. So let me go to these folks in Vokai. Let me get in with them. Let me form some bonds and some relationships and see what angles I have, because I know that Elaine's not playing that game. That's not the game that she's playing. She's not playing Survivor the way that I'm playing Survivor. And I know that because I had played the game with her for 14 days before that. So I knew I could go and I could backstab her. I could kind of find that back door before she would. And it worked, because Vokai was going to vote Elaine out. They were going to vote Elaine out along with myself, Missy, and Elizabeth. It wasn't until Elaine went to the Island of the Idols that they were like, oh, hold up. We know Elizabeth went, she might have an idol. We know Elaine went, she might have an idol. These guys are telling us to vote on Elaine. They might be trying to play us. So let's blindside Aaron. So that's their idea. Their idea to blindside me came only after the fact that she went to the island. So for me, when I found out she had a block of the vote, It was a no-brainer, because I knew Elaine was loyal. I knew she wasn't going to pull, you know, something fast on me. So when you can go into tribal council and have a guarantee, take it. And that's what I did. I took a guarantee. So there was never any point where I was Lyra strong or Vokai strong. It was Aaron strong. What's best for my game? And that was best for my game.
And do you feel like from that first vote, it jump-started your game 1,000%? Or do you feel like, say, if Ronnie stayed in the game, do you feel like you would have still been playing Aaron strong? Or do you feel like you might have been caught up in something else?
No, if Ronnie stayed in the game, I would have been playing headstrong. I would have had a false sense of confidence, and it's that false sense of confidence that gets your ass voted out. So for me, knowing that, all right, you ain't what you think you are. You a chump. You need to figure it out, bro. That's it. Yeah. It was a check. It was a reality check. Like, they're playing the game too. So you need to play the game. So I'm thankful that I got blindsided. Obviously not thankful I lost Ronnie, but for my game, I made it farther than I would have made it had Ronnie stayed in the game. I can tell you that for sure.
True. Do you think being a person of color, you had to play a different type of game as opposed to someone else, like another male? Like, say there was another male like you that's not a person of color. Like, do you feel like you had to play a different game, or do you feel like you could just go out there and play the game that you wanted to play?
All right, I'm going to use this analogy. All right, some people might agree with it, some people might not agree with it. All right, just take me and Tommy for the instance. All right, Tommy is another physical guy. So if you look at him from an aesthetic standpoint, he's a big dude. He's muscular, tall, dominating guy, does well in challenges. You look at me the same light. I would liken it to two dogs. All right, Tommy is a golden retriever. He looks like a golden retriever in the eyes of most people, where I look like a Doberman Pinscher. So if you're going to a dog park and you're about to pet a random dog, you're going to pet the golden retriever, or you're going to pet the Doberman Pinscher? Most people are probably going to pet the golden retriever. And I think for me, being a person of color, there's always that stigmatism in people's eyes. Most people, and I'm not going to categorize all people.
Right.
I'm just going to generalize it, okay? Generalize. And I know some people out there don't see color, and I'm not taking away from that. But at the end of the day, my experience in my life has always told me that this is how you're seen in the eyes of people around you. You need to be aware of that. So for me, I'm very aware of, I'm not colorblind. I see black and white. And I think there's an aspect of me being an African-American male, big, tall, that plays into how I have to play the game of Survivor. And I leave it at that.
And I bring that up because sometimes it does annoy me when people are like, it doesn't matter. It does matter. And I just think that people also just need to remember that our experiences as Black men are so much different. We're not saying we're not taking away from anyone else's experience. But, you know, sometimes, like, for instance, me at Kagyan, I was the only Black gay male on my tribe. Do you think there's a coincidence I went out first? Like, you know, it's a matter of how people perceive you. And so I just was curious about that because I saw very on, and again, I tweeted, I screamed, I was so proud of you and Missy. You guys played, I mean, first of all, I felt like the first half of your season, it was only really you and Missy playing the game. And so I'm like, yes, I'm here for Aaron. Like, you know, making these strong moves, making these strategic moves. However, I'm like, wait a minute. He might be playing a little too aggressive, a little too hard. But I was in my mind wondering, like, I wonder if this is him purposely, like, you know what? Listen, they're going to see me as a target. I'm going to stand out. So I have to play a hard game. I can't play a wallflower game where, like, okay, I can just sit in the back and lay in the shelter and everything will be peaches and cream.
There's no way I can play that game. And anybody right. that says, oh, Aaron should have played a little bit less and Missy didn't, you know, should have toned it down a little bit. Look, so I'm either going to be a chump, try to sit in the back and get picked off regardless, or try to control my fate, control my destiny, control the game. And who knows, survivor god strike, and I get lucky, I find an idol here, I find an idol there, and a rock draw here, a rock draw there, I end up in the final three. And that's really what it would take for me to make it to the end. I can't sit and play a passive game. I'm not going to DK chill. Like, that just ain't going to, people are going to be like, yo, who's this dude think he is? No, he got to go. Like, and that is 100% associated with what I look like.
Absolutely.
You cannot change that. And I, you know, I've lived on this earth 36 years. I've experienced it. So you can't tell me otherwise. You can't Absolutely. Tell me that I'm playing the race card. It's just not a conversation that you're going
to
win.
It's your experience and how you choose to have it. And that's why I wanted to have that conversation with you, only because I feel like it's important for this conversation to be had. A lot of the times people don't want to talk about it because it makes people uncomfortable, but it's not here to make you uncomfortable. But the more that we can talk about something like this, like, hey, we do look different and it's okay. Let's celebrate our differences. But if we don't talk about it, then it is just like, oh, where's the golden retriever? I'm just going to run to the golden retriever and touch the golden retriever. Like, no, I want to go and pet the Aaron dog first. So
yeah, that Doberman Pinscher. Yes. Go give the Doberman Pinscher some love. Come on.
So I just think that it's important for the conversation to be had. Now, you won the first two immunity challenges of the merge, and you were voted out immediately after that. Do you think those immunities put a target on your back? Do you regret winning them? Or do you feel like, nah, like, that's the only way that I had to go?
All right, hindsight is 20/20, right? You got perfect vision after the fact. So I can honestly say that if I could have gone back and done it all over again, I would have not won either of those two challenges. I would have actually performed very poorly and hopefully thrown up enough of a smoke screen that these people would have been like, all right, yeah, like, this dude ain't what we thought he was. Like, he's wearing away, he's wearing down, he's getting tired, he's hungry. We can get him. I mean, maybe if I would have played up that, where I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm hurt, I'm having a tough time in these challenges, that could have managed my threat level. Okay, so you sit back and say that now. However, right. When you're in the game, okay, you're in the game and you are a fan of the game and you understand how quickly things can change and you know what it's like to be at tribal council and get blindsided. You know what it's like to have people lie to you. How can you trust that the social bonds that you made and your mitigation of your threat level is enough to keep you in the game? Why not take matters into your own hands and win? Because if you win, you guarantee a spot in the next tribal council. So that's from a headspace wise. That's where I was. Obviously, I can look back at it and I can say, maybe let's try it differently. I don't know if it would have turned up differently. I don't know if I would have been the merge boot. I very easily could have been the merge boot. And a lot of people say, you know, with the whole situation that went on, that, oh, no, it wasn't that way. I could have very easily been a topic of conversation that just was not shown, because I know Nora told me, she straight up, she was like, yo, you got to win. You got to win. Because if you don't win, you're going home. And she told me that. And that was right before the challenge. Despite everything that was shown, that was never shown, and that conversation happened on camera. And for me, that's when I was like, damn, these people coming for me.
Right. They out here for you. Now, you brought it up, and I do just want to touch on the situation of this season. I know that it kind of, like, got the season a little murky, and they kind of sort of, like, tied you in it in a way. Is there, like, anything, like, the first time that you're off the season that you want to say?
Oh, hell yeah.
Or we feel like, you know, this is like your time to like say what you want to say, because I'm so curious, because you know how I felt about during the situation, and I reached out to you privately because I felt like it was important for me to reach out to someone that, like, you know, I had a relationship with you, and I was, you know, concerned about how you're doing because I know how it was perceived on the TV screen. But I'm like, the Aaron that I know isn't anything like this, and I just always feel like it's important for people to own their mistakes, take accountability, and move forward. And I, what I didn't like about everything that went down was I just did not like the lynch mob that was out after everybody, because I'm like, if you want to affect change, if you want things to change, if you want people to understand where you're coming from, the lynch mob ain't the way to go about it. Like, you know, you have to come with compassion, you got to come with love, you have to come with understanding and being able to see both sides of it. So I just was curious to get your take on whatever you want to say. I don't want to, like, you know, do you got the floor to say whatever.
Yeah, first off, I would like to say that people are entitled to their opinions, and I'm not going to tell somebody how they should or shouldn't feel. I'm not going to tell people that they shouldn't overreact. I'm not going to tell people that, hey, you don't know me, so don't judge me. Judge away. I mean, I made the decision to go and play Survivor. I made the decision to have my life put front and center on national television in front of millions of people, to be judged, to be criticized. I am not going to take away that voice from somebody. However, what I would like to say, okay, what was depicted and what was shown in people's reaction to that situation, from my point of view, is not any bit of the reality that I was going through at all. And I'm going to say from my point of view, not from anybody else's point of view. So everything that I'm going to say in regards to what happened is from my perspective and my point of view. And if some people were to take the time to hop in my shoes and understand where I was coming from, maybe they would be a little bit kinder and gentler in how they handled my comments that were depicted on television. Okay, so I'll just get that out of the way. Now, when it comes to that situation, what you got to understand is everybody out there is playing the game. All right, people are playing, and you're in alliances, and you can't trust people. You can't trust some people. For me, okay, the way that I saw what was going on, okay, I had no clue whatsoever that Kelly was involved in any of this talk at all. Her name never came across to me as somebody who had made accusations against Dan. It was never discussed from Elizabeth and Missy that Kelly had an issue with Dan. It was never discussed on original or old new Vokai that Kelly had a problem with Dan. So I never once made a comment towards Kelly, nor tried to silence Kelly, nor tried to say that Kelly was lying, nor tried to say that Kelly didn't have a right to feel the way she felt. I didn't even know she was part of what was going on until Dan looked over at her at tribal council and was like, "Is this about Kelly?" That's when I was like, "Skirt? Who? What?" I thought this was all the time about Janet saying Elizabeth and Missy felt some type of way. So in my mind, what I'm experiencing going through is that Janet is on one side of the alliance, and I am on another side of the alliance. Elizabeth and Missy are my tightest, closest people in this game. So all I know that's going on is that Janet is saying one thing. I ask Missy and Elizabeth, they're telling me another thing. I talk to Dan. He knows nothing. So in my head, it's Janet is trying to drive a wedge between myself, Missy, and Elizabeth, because the three of us were topic of conversation at Merge. So in my head, I'm thinking she's just trying to get between us. She's making up things. She's telling me that those girls both felt some type of way about Dan, because that's what Janet's saying to me. She's saying Elizabeth and Missy came crying back to me, telling me that, you know, Dan did something to them. And I'm asking Elizabeth and Missy, and they're like, no, everything's cool. No, like, no, Aaron, trust us, like, we're good, we're cool, like, we have no problem with Dan. So in my head, I'm like, oh, all right, like, shit, Janet's just trying to play us. That's where I'm coming from. My whole perspective the entire time was, I got Missy and Elizabeth's back, because I know they got my back in the game of Survivor. In the game of Survivor, not in the game of life, not somebody accusing another person of inappropriate touching. I didn't even know that was going on at all, one bit. I had no morsel of information. The only bit of information I had was that Janet was saying Elizabeth and Missy were questioning Dan's touching. I asked Elizabeth and Missy, they said no, repeatedly said no. Did you cry to Janet? No. She made that up, and that's it. That's me. That's where I came from. I'm not going to talk about any other people. I'm not going to put other words in other people's mouths. That's the part of the story that I had, which is why I thought I had a complete lay of the land, is because I just thought it was one alliance versus another alliance. Right. Now, obviously, watching it back, there's a lot more that was going on, a right. lot more.
And so I guess understanding that, and which is why I always love to just pick everybody's brain, because having an understanding of what you just described to me makes it so much more sense in my head as to why you would have like said the comment that you said at Tribal Council, because it's like, wait, what? Like, I would have known. But however, in retrospect, obviously we are Monday morning quarterbacking and we see how it is perceived on TV. Do you at least see where people were coming from when like people were just so upset with
No question. There's a reason why I put that apology video out. The apology video was understanding how my words were affecting people, knowing the entire magnitude of the situation that was going on. Obviously, you as a viewer have the chance to see everything right. in real time. Well, not necessarily real time, because we know editing can kind of change the timeline up, but... And that's a whole other situation. But we are not privy to the same information. I, for sure, did not have the information from Kelly's perspective. I didn't know she was involved. So when I said I would have known about it, I wasn't talking about Kelly. I didn't know Kelly had, there was an issue. I was talking about Elizabeth and Missy, because that's who was being accused of the touching situation. I'm saying they would have told me. Why would they lie to me about that? Like, that doesn't make any sense, Janet.
I think that is such a good point to be made, because obviously you know what millions of people thought your comment was actually directed to. So, I mean, it's just crazy. But it's just so good to, like, be able to hear you break it down for us to really understand. Because I also just think it's so important for people to realize that, like, yes, when you watch Survivor, like, you as a fan get to... And I always... When I talked to Missy last week, I was explaining to her, and you'll understand this as well too, Aaron. Like, when you watch Survivor, like, you have to just be careful, because when I watch Survivor, I watch as a fan, and I have to like preference it sometimes, because sometimes you might do something stupid, Aaron, and I might tweet like, Aaron, that's stupid, get him out of here. But that's not like me as like your friend, Bryce. That's like me as a viewer, Bryce. And a lot of the times, like me as the viewer, Bryce, I always forget that, you know what, it's a whole 24 hours going on out there. It's like they got so much footage that never gets shown, and the only thing that really gets shown is like these 10 minutes of a whole day. So I think that is so important for the fans to like remember that, like, there's so much more going on, and there's so lack of information. They don't realize how segregated we are out there, how like top locked and like they keep us out there. So I just think it's like an unfortunate situation, but I'm glad that you guys were able to kind of accept your responsibility and to move on from it.
That's it, and that's what it boils down to. And I'm a fan of the show, and I'm a fan of the game, and I think going through it and living it and experiencing the aftermath of an episode airing, I think I've changed my perspective as a fan. And I don't know that you could do that unless you go through the game and you play it and you watch yourself back on television. And what I can tell to people is out there is, hey, look, get vested in a character, okay? Get vested in what you see on TV as a character, the same way you would on any other television show, knowing that these people have real lives outside the game. These people are real people. And Survivor is not going to cast bad people. They're not going to put bad people on the show. They're not going to put people who are negative in their community. I mean, I can speak for everybody in the cast that we are all good people. All of us have done great things in our lives, and we don't conduct ourselves in negative ways. And when you get caught up in what you're being shown, it's a fraction of what's going on. They can control you, and they can control your edit. They can control, you know, how they depict you saying what you're saying, and me rolling my eyes to a comment that Jeff makes, but then you edit it and splice it with something that Kelly says, and they're like, Aaron is a dickhead. He's rolling his eyes at what Kelly's saying or what Janet's saying. Like, damn, like, don't you realize, like, they could take my eye roll from something that Ronnie says and put it after what Elaine said? So you gotta understand, look, like, get vested in a character, love a character, hate a character, but don't hate the person. The hate mail that I got and the things that people were saying was just like, damn, like, y'all feel that way about me as a person? Like, you're telling me that my son should be an orphan? Like, wow. I mean, I would never take it to that level. And again, I'm not going to tell people how they should or they shouldn't handle situations. But I think that some people do need a reality check, and they need to check themselves and need to understand and kind of take inventory of themselves as people and take responsibility for themselves as people, and not try to you attack somebody like that you don't know anything about. And that I'll say that and kind of leave that there.
For sure. And I agree with that. But I, like I told you before in private, is that like you can't take anything of what they say. You have to know who you are, the integrity that you are as a man, as a husband, as a father, and move on for that. Because if you focus on the negative energy, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it ain't even worth it. So I just, thank you for being open and willing to kind of touch on that subject, because I know that you had a lot to say, and I definitely wanted to hear your point of view. Now, kind of sort of to flip the subject a little bit, was we saw that you were like closely aligned with Missy and Elizabeth. Now, had you guys made it further in the game, would they have been your ideal final three? Or do you think you would have been more like, you know, bringing the Go Army around with you? Where was your mind thinking at when you made the merge? Like, was this like, this my final three? Or let me get some DK Chillins out here and see what I can pull together.
Missy never had a spot the final three with me. I never had a spot at the final three with Missy. I think that was spoken between both of us, that we both understood, you know what? Like,
So let me ask a question, because you know I never make the merge and I never get this far. So somebody out there that's never played the game, and you have a close alliance with Missy, like from day one, and you know, when in your mind was you like, I would need to break it off from her? Now I need to take notes, because you never know. But I'm just saying, like, when in your mind was you like, all right, I got to cut Missy go, because if I bring her to the end, I don't want no diamond window type situation. So when in your mind did you think about, I need to get rid of her?
For me, I was hoping that they took Missy out before they took me out. So when I say they, that blood wasn't directly on my hands. I would love that kill. I would love the fact to be able to take a player out like Missy. That was definitely, crossing my mind. But there was a point in time where I said, if she's not gone by six, I'm going to have to make a move. So for me, it was the number six that I had for her, that if at six she's there, then I'm gonna sell my game out and make a Hail Mary, and not gonna allow her close to a fire. I'm not gonna allow her close to, you know, to a chance to win another immunity challenge, because she was definitely my biggest threat out there to win individual immunity. So for me, it was, all right, if they didn't take Missy out, if they don't take her out, I'm gonna have to make a move at six. Whether it was good for my game or bad for my game, I know sitting next to her at final three, I'm going to say this right now, I didn't stand a chance. So I'll call it what it is. And Missy had a really good story, and I thought she played the best complete game out there of anybody in the entire season. Second close to me, but I thought that Missy played a phenomenal game, and she wasn't going to sit next to me. Elizabeth, on the other hand, she was very nice. She was great. I trusted her. She trusted me. I would have no problem sitting next to Elizabeth. Just from a resume standpoint, I thought that my resume would stack up a lot stronger than hers. Obviously, if people were thinking with emotion, then Elizabeth would have a chance. But if they saw through that and realized who played a better game of Survivor, I know that I could have got votes over her. I had eyes on Dean, and believe it or not, I have eyes on Tommy. I really wanted to sit next to Tommy, just because I saw a lot of what Tommy was doing. Was a very passive game. It was a very safe game. It was a game that won. It was a winning game. But I think that if I sat next to Tommy, if Missy sat next to Tommy, if Lauren sat next to Tommy, the result would not have been what it was. So, that's just my perspective.
No, I agree. So let's speak on it real quick, because I am curious to know, like, what are some of the factors that you consider when voting for a winner? Now, obviously, I'm a DK Chillin fan over here, but I mean, I slightly and politely kind of thought he was a snooze fest until the last two episodes. Do you feel like what he did, and you can give me both perspectives, or maybe they're the same, as you watching it on the jewelry and watching it back at home, do you feel like baby boy turned it on enough? Because, I mean, he almost did like a Chris Underwood. Like, I mean, the final episode was like all his. Or were you like, no, I want a more consistent gameplay of how Tommy kind of sort of worked his way up, just always being on the right side of the votes, guarding the votes, getting the people together? Like, where you at with something like that?
See, to me, Tommy had accomplices. You know, I mean, Lauren was not Tommy's right-hand man. Tommy was Lauren's right-hand man.
Right.
That's real. That's real. Like, that. Don't let him tell you otherwise, all right? So Lauren controlled that relationship. So for me, all right, both Tommy and Dean were snooze fest to me. All right, I'm just going to call it what it is. But, let's say this. Where am I? Where are they?
I mean, so I mean, okay.
If a snooze fest is going to get me $1 million, then shit, I should have been a damn snooze fest. Like,
okay, you should have been sleep.
Yeah, I should have missed. I don't even know if that would have worked for me though. But neither of them to me played a aggressive game, a strategic game, like from the jump. And I think Dean played less of that than Tommy. Tommy played a better social game, strategic game overall. But Dean turned it on in the fourth quarter. All right, he made moves. He played the game in its entirety, to me, better than Tommy. Now, again, there are survivor purists out there who will say Tommy played a great strategic game. And if you want to associate strategic and social in the same light, okay, yeah, you're right. But to me, the social aspect is just a microcosm of what survivor is. It is a part of it. It is a piece of it. Also, it goes into play is what you do around camp, the true survival aspect of it. Do you participate? Do you build shelters? What do you do in challenges? Do you win challenges? What do you do with idols? Do you find idols? Do you play them correctly? And in my mind, if you're breaking the game down in those sections and those pieces, Dean played a better overall game. If you're looking at the outplay segment, I think people voted 80% outwit, 10% outplay, 10% outlast. And that's why Tommy won the way that he won.
Who did you vote for? You voted for Tommy?
I voted Dean.
Okay. So, yeah, right. So you're saying, okay, with the game plan. Now, let me ask you this question. Do you feel like, because I, now let me just preference this. This is Fan Bryce talking. Somebody's just watching the TV show. Do you feel as though the whole merge was saying, like, and I'm just saying post-merge, that like Lauren is this big threat? Or did you feel like it wasn't until the ends when they're like, oh wait, I don't want to sit next to somebody like Lauren? Or like, where do you feel like that was? Because I just thought it was so weird, because, and maybe it's the edit, I felt like Lauren and Tommy again were so underrated, and obviously on TV they made it seem like Lauren was Tommy's right hand. So why all of a sudden towards the end is everybody acting like, oh, I can't go that far with her, oh, I can't play with her? Like, what was your thought on that?
So this is the deal, all right? And I'm just going to call it the way that I see it. This is the way that I see it. Myself and Missy controlled the game up until the point that we got voted out. There's a reason why my confessional level was where it was at. My screen time was where it was at. That Missy's screen time was where it was at. Her confessional was where it was at. And we never went to the Island of the Idols. Both of our numbers were up there at the top. If you take everybody that went to the Island of the Idols out, our screen time was the most, because we were doing the most to play the game. And the rest of the tribe knew that. But there's an aspect of it when you have more than just two, because we had Elizabeth with us tight. Dean was with us at points of the game. Elaine was with us at points of the game. So when people perceive that and they're like, well, wait a second, damn, if I make a move on Aaron or Missy with these numbers right now, it might backfire at me. So I think had we not split tribes, the game would have played out a lot more different. So going up to the point where the double episode happens, where myself and Missy both get voted out, then you see the shift in power happen. Then you see Lauren take control of the game. And that was actually how it was. Lauren, at one point in time, Jeff asked, who feels like they're a goat? Lauren raised her hand. This was when I was still in the game. She raised her hand because she knew. She ain't done shit. She definitely didn't do things around camp. She wasn't making moves. She was emotional. She was crying. And people were afraid of her because of how emotional she was. However, she took advantage of the opportunity, seized the opportunity that when Missy and I were out the game, she took control. She dominated it. She took social control. She had the most social capital of anybody out there. Lauren slept with a blanket and a pillow every single night and nobody said a damn word. There's something to be said about that. When you got two pillows, two blankets with 13 people and not a damn person says a damn word to Lauren.
That is true. I remember on my time in Cagayan, it was very, like, the best spot for us was, like, the middle. And, like, if anybody slept there more than once, then that was a huge issue. So, yeah, that
Lauren,
does say a
that's
lot.
Lauren's spot. That was Lauren's spot. So, yes. So they did not turn it on until after we got voted out. And that was how it was. That's not the edit. That's just the game that they played.
So you as a jury member, final. Okay, we're doing a different game of Survivor. Now it's final five. It is Tommy, Dean, Janet, Nora, and Lauren. You can pick a winner from there. Who, from your perspective, will be a deserving? Obviously, don't get me wrong. I think Tommy is a well-deserving winner. But if you could pick it from your point of that five, who's your winner?
Eliminating all emotion and just looking at the game in its entirety, Lauren deserve to win hands down, unanimously, over the rest of the four. Okay. Not taking away from their games, not saying they played a bad game. Obviously, Tommy won $1 million, so he played a winner's game. He played a great game. But Lauren, and I will say that if Lauren was sitting next to Tommy, I see situations where Lauren wins over Tommy. It is definitely not a 7-2 vote. I see it very close, but I think Lauren, despite the fact that people like Tommy, that Lauren would have won.
So can you respect Tommy's gameplay of helping Dean with fire and not really helping Lauren?
Absolutely. Okay. No, I think that was genius. I think that was $1 million move right there. So watching that back, hats off to Tommy. That was played very well. That's a huge move. And unfortunately, at Tribal Council, he did not own that move or talk about that move. Nora is the one that called him out, and Tommy never took ownership of that until the game was over, where he says, yeah, I did this, I did that. Own the game. Own your game. And that was my whole point, was take ownership of your entire game, of everything that you did, despite the fact of we know you stab people's backs. Like, this, it's Survivor. We all expect that. Own it.
So, overall, how would you rate your season? Despite the drama, I'm talking the gameplay, I'm talking about the players. This is the first season in Survivor history that we've ever seen two African-American male and female players win simultaneously immunity challenges. Despite the drama that happened, I was screaming on my couch like, look at Aaron! Look at Missy! Like, I was hyped for it. It was one of the diverse casts we've ever had before. How would you rate your season, being, you know, what you called yourself a Survivor fan?
All right, you take out the merge episode, or you take out the way the merge episode was depicted. I thought our pre-merge was top five.
Oh,
I thought it was a phenomenal pre-merge.
Top five. This is 2004 Aaron talking. Okay, go ahead, continue.
Top five. All right, so, I mean, you got characters like Ronnie, and we didn't get to see Ronnie. Like, Ronnie, just Google him. Google Ronnie Barna. The television that he could have been, we got robbed of TV gold. You got Elaine, like Karishma. I mean, like Nora. The characters that we have in our cast, amazing characters, right? The gameplay, blindside after blindside after blindside. I thought the merge was the pre-merge was very entertaining. To me, the post-merge was lackluster. I thought that, you know, we essentially saw a pagonging of Lyra with Vokai. The editing department did a good job making it not look that way, but we literally saw, once, you know, that swap happened, it went Lyra, 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 Lyra. Like, that to me is boring. You know, there was opportunities for people to shake things up, and I just think that they played a safe game, and, you know, unfortunately they didn't make moves that could have A, made better TV, and B, put them in a position to win. You know, Dean doesn't save Tommy. Dean might win that game. You know, to me, that was more of a safe play, and stupid on his part, wasn't smart. But yeah, I thought it was a great pre-merge, lackluster post-merge, bottom 10 overall season.
Okay. Most of the times, I am more proponed, and not just because I'm a pre-merger. A lot of the times in Survivor seasons, I think the pre-merge is the best part of the game. There are so many players that get taken out that their personalities are hilarious. So I am always a proponent of the pre-merge. So, I mean, that's so exciting. And I don't want to hold too much of your time, but do you want to give us any final words before I let you go, Mr. Aaron?
Oh, final words. I'm just going to circle back to, you know, a big piece of what I try to talk about with the whole merge episode, that, look, man, like, you know, people out there are fans, and they're passionate fans, and I hope that as time has gone on, that people can take a step back and respect that everybody out there was playing the game. None of us are bad people. And I'm going to say that. None of us are bad people. We all wanted to play the game of Survivor. And unfortunately, this is going to be a dark cloud over our season. It's going to be associated with our season forever. Everybody's going to always remember season 39 as that hot mess season. And it was hot mess for one reason and one reason alone. You take that outside, you take that out. I thought it was a great season with a good cast, with great gameplay, a good winner. Again, I'm not taking away from Tommy as a winner. I thought he's a very good winner. And you know, hopefully that as time goes on, more and more people will warm up to the fact that season 39 was actually not a terrible season. I know a lot of people are putting it at the bottom. Season 39 was not a terrible season. It was a good season. I had fun. Hopefully I have an opportunity to showcase more of what I can do in the game of Survivor. I have no idea how that works, and I'll just put that out there in the universe. But I appreciate the time that you've given me to talk. Those are my parting words.
Well, and I got another question for you real quick. So you know DK chilling out here on the internet selling his underwear. Is the fans want to know, maybe just me, are you going to put them red underwear on eBay, or is it just DK chilling still in the underwear game?
So my wife sees numbers. She sees what Dean is pulling for his underwear, and I say, okay, honey, all right, let's talk about the person that buys those underwear. Let's talk about what that person is doing with those underwear. Let's throw out scenarios, okay?
So first of Dean's all, gonna have to. I better not have been in none of those scenarios. Okay, let me just say that. Let me just put that out there.
No, I would never classify you in that scenario. But I just don't know what anybody's gonna want with a pair of used drawers. And I don't even want to imagine. So, no, my underwear will not be sold. They're in my house. They're stashed away. That was against my wife's judgment. My wife told me to sell.
The fans want to know, are they clean, though, or have they been washed? Okay, they've been washed. Okay.
See, I know Dean said he didn't wash his drawers. That's nasty. That's nasty.
Okay, then this is the last question, okay? You effed it up in New York when I seen you. How does my theme song go? Where's 2004 Aaron at?
See, why are you gonna put me on the spot?
Yeah, because it's the real question. This is what the people wanted to know. Right. Okay. Then give me a line then. I know
it's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants podcast.
That ain't how it sounds. Say it how it sounds.
It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You're fast in the rest. I didn't take time to memorize the lyrics as the lyrics go, and that's all I got. That's quite all right.
And when you were saying it, I could see your offbeat two-step that you'd be doing too anyway, but I could just see it. But Aaron, I think that this was absolutely amazing. I am so humbly honored that you would want to give the Purple Pants podcast the exclusive Aaron Meredith take of your Survivor season. I am forever in your debt. I think that you are an amazing person. I appreciate your openness and willingness to be my friend, because, you know, a lot of people see what I tweet and all that stuff, and they don't really take the time to get to know that I'm a real bitch. And so I appreciate you for that, because a lot of people just like, oh, I ain't dealing with him. So I appreciate our friendship. I appreciate you. I look forward to seeing you soon. And also, for the fans that don't know, I have family in Rhode Island. Aaron is from Rhode Island, but little did Aaron know that I am the true prince of Rhode Island. So I plan on coming to Rhode Island sometime, and maybe I'll pass the crown to you. I don't know if you deserve it or not, but I just want to thank you so much for coming on my podcast. It's been a pleasure, my brother Aaron.
I'm gonna go ahead and say the same thing. Completely humbled, completely honored, Bryce. I appreciate your friendship. I appreciate the candidness of our conversations that we have off the podcast, and I do value as a friend, value as a professional in this industry, and I'm very thankful, very honored to be here, sharing this opportunity, sharing this time with you. And I would like to say that Jamal might have something to say about the Prince of Providence, but I'm gonna go ahead and leave that right there. So you might want to talk to him about the Prince of Providence.
Jamal can't at me. He knows what's up. Jamal know what's up. But thank you so much. It's been so much of a pleasure. And wait, wait a minute. Where can people follow you at, though, Aaron? What's your Twitter? What's your Instagram? What's all it? Well, tell us real quick what you've been doing. You got a gym, right? I'm trying to 2020. I'm trying to get my body together. What's popping? What you doing?
Yeah, I got big things coming. I got big things, big fitness things coming my way. You're going to see a lot more fitness-related information on my social media. That's what I do. That's my passion. That's what I love. So Survivor's over and done with. So yeah, follow me on Instagram, Aaron C. Meredith, and then on Twitter, ACM_fitness. Those are the two spots you can find me. And like I said, if you don't like fitness, if you don't like exercise, nutrition, you probably won't want to follow me, so don't even do it. And I don't want to hear any issues that you have. So again, if you want some fitness knowledge, you want some knowledge bombs, you want to take that life up to the next level, your body up to the next level in 2020, follow me, Aaron C. Meredith on Instagram, ACM_fitness on Twitter. And yeah, I'll see you on the other side.
Yes, because I'm excited. But real quick, because he's not doing a really good job, ladies. Ladies, if y'all don't like going to the gym where it's men there and you want to just feel more comfortable, listen, this is why you need to, if you in the Rhode Island, Boston area, New Hampshire, you need to check out Aaron's gym. He has a ladies-only gym, so you don't have to worry about that pressure of, like, what I look like. You can just get your gym on, and you can just really work on your core. So just tell him a little, okay, what's the name of your gym, Aaron? Come on, you that good?
Yeah. I got you. Yes, absolutely. So I've got two locations in Rhode Island. I got one in Westerly. It's the bottom southern part of Westerly, southern part of Rhode Island, and I've got one in Warwick, which is central part of Rhode Island. And both of them are women's only locations. You come in, it's more so a boutique training studio, so it's not the gym that you walk into and you kind of do your own thing. We've got coaches. The coaches take you through class. You walk in, you're in and out 50 minutes. We will also work on nutrition. But just like Bryce said, if you're not comfortable in working out in a gym, if you feel like you're getting stared at, if you feel like you're not comfortable squatting or in a squat rack, we got a nice, safe environment, comfortable environment, both male and female instructors and coaches. We, like I said, we work on everything from your fitness, nutrition, accountability, mental health, all that stuff. So yeah, look us up, look me up if you're in the local area. Believe me, I'll make sure that 2020 is your best year.
Yeah, so wait, real quick, so we can get exclusive while we on air. I know I keep saying I'm going, then I come back. But if I come to Rhode Island, I could get me a little tour and give me a little workout at the gym, though, a little private class?
Absolutely, no question. Actually, on our Sundays, right now we got co-ed classes that go on. So 9:45, I got a co-ed class. So tell you what, Bryce, you come up here on Sunday, I'll put you through a class, and I'll make sure personally I'm there to coach you and ensure that you get that nice solid pump and that sweat session going. So yeah, come up. Sundays, 9:45.
Sundays, 9:45 at both locations?
Just my Warwick location. Okay, that's where I'm at right now.
Just the Warwick
location.
Okay, you gotta park the car in Warwick.
I don't have that. I don't have that Rhode Island drawl. I'm from Connecticut, so I speak phonetically correct. Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Shots fired
to those Rhode Islanders out there. Shots fired.
That 2004, Aaron, keep on coming out. But thank you so much for coming. It's been so real.
It's all love.
Aaron.
It's all love. Yep. Yeah, likewise, Bryce. Try to keep it real. You keep it real. I appreciate that.
Okay. Yes, and that was my great interview with Aaron Meredith. So let me know what you thought about that interview. Make sure you tweet me, DM me, send me a message on the Instagram. Let me know what you thought. Wow, I was really surprised that, like, you know, ooh, Aaron ain't hold nothing back. But moving right along, let's get into my favorite part of the episode, Purple Pants Pick. You pick, I say. You pick, I talk. You pick, I twerk. Oh, maybe it don't go that way. But anyway, first on the Purple Pants Picks, I've got Car Wood 22. She writes, new Netflix show, The Circle. Are you watching and who's your favorite? So let me tell y'all about this. So I'm just minding my business like I always do, and I get a text from Robert, okay? A voice message text. Talk about, hey, Bryce, I know you don't really like the voice messages, but Nora got me into it, and it's a game changer. Robert, there's a new show called The Circle. You should really watch it. So I was like, okay, let me get into the show, like, you know, and the show is basically my life. I live alone, okay? So 80% of the time I'm alone, and how I communicate with people is either text or via social media. So I'm living The Circle, my life. But yes, I'm watching it. It's a very interesting premise, so I'm loving it. You want to know who I like so far? Well, first of all, Christopher is me. I am Christopher. Christopher is me. I like, what's his name? Sherbam. I like him. I feel like he's going to win. He's like the most realest person there. I definitely like Sammy. Sammy is just like one of them girls. We ain't in no skinny girl alliance. We ain't in no pretty girl alliance. We in a real bitch alliance. So I definitely like Sammy. You know, I like Joey. Joey reminds me of my friend Rodney. I feel like they're the same person. And you know, last, but certainly not least. Okay, Antonio, Jalay, and he from Delaware, baby. Antonio, you gonna be in my Zaddy calendar or no? I'm just asking. But yes, so I'm on it, and so maybe I'll add that to the menu, the circle, and I can review some of the circle. But let me know, tweet me, let me know if that's something I should do. You know, I needs to know what y'all think. Okay, Australian Ashley writes, did you watch Cardi B's Cardi? Let me wet the whistle. Hold on. Did you watch Cardi B tour her house on Instagram? Yes, we saw Cardi B and Offset, you know, taking us on a tour of a million square foot mansion. It was absolutely everything. So I had to do some research because I was like, wait a minute, I thought Cardi B bought a house already, but she had bought her mama a house like a year ago. And so now her and Offset have this amazing house. Child, one of the bathrooms is bigger than my whole living situation. Okay, Cardi, let me move into a closet. So I was here for it. I love to see black excellence. I love to see young entrepreneurs, people like Cardi, from a stripper that they would say never be anything, buying her dream house. I love it. Okay, we got Philtastic has said, have you ever tried Underwood wine? Now, when I first read this Philtastic, I was like, is you trying to be funny? Because you know I'm going to play about my Underwood. But then I did a little research, and yes, they got Underwood canned wine. Now, I didn't see it at my local winery, or you know, the wine and spirit store. So I'm gonna, like, we sell wine at our grocery stores now in Pennsylvania. So I'm gonna check out some wineries. I'm gonna check out the grocery store the next time I go up in there and see if I can try it. Yes, and I'll FaceTime Chris and let him know I'm drinking some Underwood. Okay. Whew. Okay, we got EA Taylor 20. What type of workouts do you like the most? Shout. Whew. New year, who this? Okay, new year, we getting healthy, we getting right. So obviously you guys know I'm a runner, so I really like cardio. Cardio is like the best thing for me. I just love to run. Put me on the track, put me on the trail, and I can run. I also like to do some core, you know, child, you know, the gut getting a little out of control after all this sweet potato pie, all this, you know, church's fried chicken, Popeye's chicken sandwiches, you know, cookie. Oh, anyway, sorry. Ooh, sorry. So- Sorry, y'all. Just, you know, my imagination going wild. You know, y'all ever try them little ice creams? They like to eat Emos, where it's like the ice cream in a little ball. Ooh. But anyway, so I like to do some core exercises as well, so, you know, get the core right. You know, so that's basically my exercises that I do. And I need to expand because, you know, in 2020, trying to get it together. You know, I like to do a little sculpting too. Okay, you gotta sculpt this body. Okay, slim waist, fat, but no. But yes, but you know, get the little weights. You know, try to get, you know, myself a little bit together. I don't really know a lot of working out, which is why I always depend on my good friends, Dara, my friend Rodney. When do I always be trying to tell them? Even Darnell, from what season was Darnell on? But Darnell was on the other y'all know who I'm talking about, King Darnell. He always be like sending me little messages of like the stuff that I should do. But my issue is being consistent. I can do it for like a week or two, and then I always fall off. But my running and like my core, doing planks and doing like sit-ups and crunches and bicycle like movements, I can consistently do that. And it's like I always tell people, like, I don't ever want a cut up body. I just want a nice athletic tone. That's all I want. Okay. All right, EA. Now we got Jonathan Rose. Oh, come on, Jonathan Rose 10. It's like your fourth Purple Pants picks. Oh, crrr. Do you have any pets? Do you want any pets? And how do you decide when to get a pet? Well, I do have a pet. I have a red ear slider named Kimmy, and she's a bit sassy. Growing up as kids, me and my brothers, we were asthmatic children. We had asthma really, really bad. And when I went to do the allergy test, you know, where they like poke you and prick you, my whole arm lit up. So, and that was when I was like 11. So we never could have like any animals growing up. So we always had like animals in a cage. And so growing up, I've only ever had three turtles in my life. One turtle was named George. We had George for like 10 years. Another turtle, his name is Poppy. We've had Poppy for almost like 20 years and Poppy is still alive. And I have my turtle named Kimmy, and I've had Kimmy for almost 10 years now. You know, turtles live a really, really long time. Poppy was really my turtle. When my mom ended one of her marriages and we moved, that was kind of like a consolation prize. I was like entering in the 9th grade, and we got Poppy. And so Poppy was my turtle. And so when I graduated college and I was like getting ready to move out, I was like, okay, I'm taking Poppy. My mom was like, Poppy stays here. I'm like, bitch, that's my turtle. So I was really upset about that. So when I moved out and got my own little apartment, my best friend's mom, Dara, her mom, Nona, her mom's name is Denise, but we call her Nona. But Nona got me Kimmy. And so Kimmy was like a little, like, size of like a double-edged quarter. And Kimmy is huge now. And out through all of the turtles that we've always had, we've had Red Ear Sliders, Kimmy's the first girl that I've had. And to my surprise, Kimmy be laying eggs. So every like spring, Kimmy will lay an egg. And I did not know about this because I've always had male turtles. So I was like, what in the... But mind you, I'm always at work or never home when she actually lays the eggs and she eats them. So I can only ever see the remnants of eggs because like Kimmy be like, I guess she gives birth like... And then, you know, I guess she's a turtle. It's like, ooh, that's a lot of work. I'm hungry. What's there to eat? Ooh, what's this? So I guess that's just kind of sort of how it'll go with Kimmy. But yeah, I don't know. You know, you got to get pets, Jonathan, that work for you. Like my mom has Sunshine. And so I love Sunshine and I want a dog, but I don't think my lifestyle at this point is conducive to a dog because I'm never really home. I work, I travel. So who gonna walk the dog? You know, and I want to give my dog all my love and affection. So hopefully, you know, one day in the future when I have a life partner and we have a house like Cardi B, we can buy a couple of dogs and a couple of turtles. And yeah, you know, so that's, you know, that's what we got to do. Drew Morish writes, how do you hold yourself accountable for your New Year's resolution? You better speak to my heart, Drew. Listen. How do we hold ourselves accountable? New Year, who this? Okay, first of all, I feel like y'all know how I feel about New Year's resolutions. I don't necessarily like them. You know, I'm on a road for a better Bryce. So, you know, that's what I choose to because I am an evolving creature, you know. I wake up and I feel different every day. So I feel like sometimes New Year's resolutions is just essentially a setup. But if you choose to make New Year's resolutions, I ain't mad at that. Essentially, you're just on a road to a better you. I feel like you have to make them realistic and obtainable. You can't be like, I want to lose 100 pounds, but you're not doing anything to change it. You can't be like, I'm getting me a man, and you're not going out or doing anything to change it. Like, it has to be something that is obtainable, something that you can actually work towards, and something that you can reach, I feel like, is the first thing in being able to have a reachable New Year's resolution. And, you know, you got to put in the hard work. I said on this journey for a better Bryce, I want to be a healthier me. I want to be a happier me. I want to be a friendlier me. And child, here we are a couple of days into the new year, and I'm just rawr, nasty, spicy, Brycey out at everybody. And so it's like, you know, I have to, you know, actively work on, you know, first of all, holding yourself accountable. And it's not always easy, you know, because sometimes when people bring up what you're doing and you be like, you really have to, you know, hold yourself to the same standards that you hold people to. So you got to be accountable for your actions. You also have to give yourself some slack. It's a rough time of the year, you know, emotions are high. You got to be able to do what you got to do, but you got to set realistic goals. And so, you know, me getting more active, you know, I got a couple of races coming up. I need to get out there and I need to start running. And so having a great support system around you is something that I always say. A lot of my friends be texting me like, did you go running today? You go running? What's up with the running? Where you at? You know, you got to have a great support system around you because you can't just do it by yourself. But those are like my few little tips I feel like, Drew, that can maybe help, maybe not. Next one we got is MM Marlene writes, bushfires in Australia. How can we help? Bebe, have y'all been seeing the news? I am like flattered and like, wow, what is really going on? And, you know, a lot of people are like wanting to help, wanting to know what they can do. And basically, you know, since September, at least 20 people have died and over 1,500 homes have been destroyed. Among them have been about 28 people confirmed missing after the bushfire has been basically tearing through tourist hubs all over the place. And not to mention the countless species that we've been losing in this forest fire. It's just really, really crazy. And I've seen a lot of GoFundMes up that have been... Before we get into, like, the GoFundMes and all this stuff, I just think that is important because, you know, me and my friend was having a conversation, like, is the connection to all of these bushfires and wildfires in California and Australia, does it have anything to do with the climate change? And so I did a little research, and, you know, the common consensus that I got was a greenhouse gas cannot start a fire on its own. Bushfires aren't started by climate change, but, okay, they are exacerbated by the effects of global warming, okay? Y'all don't believe climate change ain't real. Listen, y'all see these hurricanes. Y'all see the ice glaciers melting. Y'all see these floods. Listen, baby, I'm trying to tell y'all, we need to do what we can do to protect Mother Earth, okay? Because we only got one Mother Earth. How can we help? So I always get a little leery about like GoFundMes and all of that, because I'm like, is all of the money really going there? But the places that I looked up that are legit is Australia's Red Cross Disaster Relief and Recovery Fund. They are taking donations, and 100% of all the donations go there. The Country Fire Service in South Australia is taking donations, and 100% of the donations go to the affected areas. The Salvation Army has a disaster donation page set up that 100% of the donations go to where we need them to go. So I'm always important about where the money going. I don't have a lot of money, but definitely when you see what is being affected, you definitely want to do something that you can change. And my heart and prayers go out to everyone affected by the bushfires in Australia. And before we end this Purple Pants Picks, I just think it's important for us to do our little part that we can do to help our, you know, situation where you're at. You know, plastic bags, why are we using them? You know, why are you not getting the recyclable bags that you can use? Straws, plastic straws, why are we still using them? There's just so many little things in our life. Recyclables, why, like, recycle what you can. Paper goods. It's just little stuff that we could do. Wasting all this water. Why are we wasting all this water? So I just want to encourage you guys. New year, who this? We all with our blueprint. If we can lower our own blueprint, listen, we can make this earth a little bit longer. You know, I talk about running. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? Do I need to drive my car? Let me walk. Let me get on a bike. You know what I'm just saying? Just with our carbon footprint, we can decrease it a lot. So, you know, here at the Purple Pants Podcast, I need for us, we go together. We need to be here for all kids, all, you know, Bob and Sunshine. We need to be here. So I just think that's important. And then Chile, our last Purple Pants pick, baby, the one and only Sarah writes, woo, Chile, Dr. Phil's house. Baby, did y'all see those photos of Dr. Phil's house? Now, here at the Purple Pants Podcast, we are about the news and reporting the facts. So I did a little research, and it is not Dr. Phil's house. It's actually his son's home, okay? But it makes it even more weird. Okay, wait. Come on, Dr. Phil's son, listen. The home is up for $5.75 million, okay? Baby, you look at the staircases. Is this the Game of Thrones? Because I'm confused. Another thing that I thought was kind of cute, baby, they had a little purple egg chair hanging from the ceiling. Now, wait a minute. I could use that in a Purple Pants podcast. But we ain't going to forget the gun wall, okay? Okay, then you got the bedazzled bear and rat child. What meet me outside. What's popping, Dr. Phil? Okay, bizarre. But that concludes Purple Pants Picks. You know, every week, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, I will post up Purple Pants Picks on my Instagram page, and you guys can write a topic, a story, a news title, a song, anything you want me to talk about it. You pick, I talk. That's the Purple Pants Pick. Now let's get into Advice with Bryce. Hi, Bryce. Hoping you're able to help me with an ongoing friend issue. What do you do with a super needy long-distance friend? One of my friends moved about 8 years ago to another state. She has been relentless in maintaining the friendship. And although things are enjoyable about her, I must admit I wouldn't mind if the friendship fizzled out. Ooh. It basically comes down to the fact that I feel badly for her and guilty if I don't make some sort of effort. Our communication is solely via text with an occasional email and in-person visit. There are days she drives me absolutely batty. If I'm involved in something and unable to get to my phone, there are times I will pick it up and find 25 to 30 messages. Who does that? I am one of the I'll text you when I text you. In addition to the ridiculous amount comes a huge amount of negativity and complaining. Often I will respond with just a few words or one sentence, hoping she gets the hint. She never does. I know that she is very socially awkward and has only one other friend besides me and her husband. If you ask why she's latched onto me, I couldn't tell you. Again, I feel badly and I'm just at a loss as to how to handle things going forward. There are times she realizes she's gone too far, but restitution is often short-lived. Any suggestions? Thanks, Bryce. Love the podcast and I'm a proud member of the Purple Pants Posse. Oh, whew. Well, that is a lot to unpack. So let me just start by saying you're a great friend. And I feel like I've had long distance friendships in my life, but I don't feel like they should be work. Now, taking into consideration that you obviously know your friend is like, you know, socially awkward, but at the same time, if this is a friendship, it needs to be give and take. It can't be you always, you know, giving in to like what she needs. What about like what you need? And in that, you know, brief description of what I read, I didn't really hear any times that like she's there for you. I didn't really hear any times that you're saying like, you know, I can depend on her when I need her. What I heard is like she's always reaching out to you and you're doing this thing. So I think that that's important. So I feel like in any friendship, whether it's long term, short term, far, you know, close, near, you know, I always feel like it has to be some type of respect and a mutual understanding. It has to be a give and take. And so, you know, you said, baby, if the friendship fizzled out, you wouldn't even be mad. I think that it's also important for us, and I'm guilty of this as well too, that you know, sometimes people come into your life for a season, sometimes people come into your life for a reason, and every friendship is not meant to take the long haul that you know life has for us. Some friendships have an expiration, and that's okay, and that's what I'm learning in my life. I've got a lot of like, sometimes I feel like I'm holding on. I even talked about this in one of the earlier podcasts, that I feel like I'm holding on to like what was and not what is present. However, I am such a loyal friend. I never want to let a friend go. However, I am huge on communication. And so I think that it's important for you to have a conversation, whether it be via text or whether it's like, you know, the next time that you're in person with that friend, to let them know, like, listen, my life has changed. I love you dearly and I want to maintain a friendship with you, but I'm just not available how you need me to be available right now. And I can support you, but this is what I can give. And I think that's important for you to be open and honest, because it's like, you can't be new year, who this? You can't be giving away yourself. And like, you know, that's the problem. We give so much of ourselves. We give everything away, but like, you know what? We have to have things for ourselves. And you know, listen, child, this girl got a husband, okay? I'm still trying to get somebody to text me back in 2020. So, you know, she's got a support system. And, you know, I think that it's okay for you to let the friendship fizzle if it fizzles out. But I think that it's important for you to set clear boundaries and also let the friend know, listen, if I don't text you right back, just know I always text back. There's no need to send me 25 to 30 messages, because if she was texting me, that'd get that ass blocked. But I think that it's so important for you to just lay down some ground rules and, you know, let her know. And if she is not here for that, then basically let the fizzle pop and let it go. But I think that it's important for us to also meet our friends where they're at. You know, you never know what you're getting out of the friendship, and you never know what she's getting out of the friendship as well, too. So I think it's important for us to meet them where they're at. But also, we can't be giving ourselves away like that. So I really hope that helps. And, you know, I want to know what's up. So keep me posted, you know, and let me know what's happening. That was a good one. That was a really good one. All right, let's get to the freak of the week, baby. So, you know, on New Year's Eve, I was out minding my business. You know, I was with Wendeezy, you know, shaking my tail feather. And the next day, I'm like, you know, let me just look at, you know, the different photos. And, baby, I came across Julia Carter's New Year, New Flex photo. Baby, Julia Carter was looking like a bag of money. And, you know, she is a friend of the show. Come on. Her Instagram is The Julia Carter. I need y'all to go to that photo. I need y'all to let her know she is the freak of the week, looking like a bag of money. Yes. Well, listen, guys, welcome to the new decade, new year. Who this? Okay. Same purple pants badass, same purple pants posse, same purple pants podcast. Until next week, guys, thank you so much for your support. And if you are listening, please make sure you subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, give me a 5-star rating. Cause you already know it's a
purple pants, it's a purple pants, it's the purple pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the purple pants podcast. You trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the purple pants. It's the purple pants.